And we saw that this has two aspects, the theory and practice. There is the understanding part and then the implementation part. Together they make a complete science. That truth has to be understood clearly, and then doesn't mean in the sense of time really. Understanding has to go hand in hand with the practical implications or the implementation. One learns and then tries to put it into practice. That again reinforces the learning. I remember that when one of our teachers teaching us physics in college, he was telling about the electricity and all that. In the classroom, he taught us that the ideas of, say, current and then potential difference and all that stuff. And we just heard that he was drawing some circuits on the blackboard, and we also look into the books. We understood a little bit. I, after studying, putting in some hours, boring it was, but after studying I understood a little bit. But then we were taken to the laboratory where these things were shown with various actual circuits. We were told to make some circuits, how they are made, how can you change the direction, how you can change the actual output of current by increasing the resistance, increasing or decreasing the resistance, how you can change those things. And then those laws which were taught through the textbooks, they become more concretized. Teacher used to give the example, you know, the electric current is pretty much like your water current. It is just as if you have a bigger pipe, means making those things more visually understandable. Water is visual, you know, you see the water. You don't see the electric current going through and all that. But if it is told as analogous to the water current, then you form a mental connection. Something that you practically handle, practically understand, when the things that the theory gets correlated with that, then our understanding becomes clearer. And also, that understanding can then be used to enrich our life. If it is only a theoretical understanding of electricity, many people wouldn't have even bothered to look into it. But look what benefits it brings to us. The understanding enriches the life, and that is the beauty of it. If that understanding has no correlation to enriching our life, then it is really speaking useless to keep on studying those things. It is waste of time. But when that understanding, when brought onto our practical level, helps us to enrich our life, like we studied electricity, and then now we can handle those things, we can use those equipments, and thus we can practically use those things. Imagine, you know, now many people cannot imagine life without electricity. What a big hue and cry when there is power outage, you know. If there is power outage, but how this thing has come in, the understanding, the practical implementation of it, all gone together, and each enriching the other, you know, each helping the other. So theory and practice has to go hand in hand, And that is, just as it is with these minor sciences like physics, chemistry and so forth, the major science, the science of life, that is called religion, there it has to become much more important. It is a matter of choice, really, whether I should study electricity or not. Even if I do not study, there are others who study and then those benefits can be reaped by me. It is, I need not study every subject. I may study economics, I may not study economics. I may go to study law or may not go to study law. But life we all have to live, and our own life. There somebody else cannot come to much help. Like somebody else can bring right food to us, but our digestion has to be up to it, you know, so that we will be able to make use of that food. If I cannot digest the food, then the best preparation will not help me. So, therefore, this life science of our living, why should I be living? What is the goal of life and how to arrive at it? All these things are to be understood by each and everyone. They are related to each and everyone. Other information, it is secondary. Doesn't matter. Human beings lived without electricity. Although these days it appears almost impossible, but you see who, about 200 years back, who cared for it? There wasn't any electricity, human beings were there. Human beings invented electricity, used electricity. Not that electricity, after electric equipment and everything came, then human beings got created. It is not so. It is we who make those things. We don't depend on them. They depend on us. But about this science of life, it is very different something. Our successful living depends on it. It is this knowledge, therefore, is connected with everyone. This knowledge has really no choice whether I will learn or I will not learn. Everybody has to learn this. There is no escape from this. If you don't learn, well, you do not then live life successfully. This, that great commentator on Vedanta scriptures, Shankaracharya, he clarifies this important difference between all other branches of knowledge and the knowledge of the religious truths. He said that you have the different types of worldly knowledge. He took, for example, that Saptadvipa Vasumati, the earth has seven islands. Now this is a nice information, good to know. But tell me, instead of seven, had there been, say, 10, would it make a difference to our life? It is, whether it is 7 or 8 or 20, what difference does it make to our life? Not much. He said all worldly knowledge is of this type. Moreover, this knowledge keeps on changing. There is no certainty either about this knowledge. And so he says this knowledge one may go to acquire, one may go to not go to acquire. Somebody may just tell that I am not interested in geography. Some people are interested in archaeology and spend life in, you know, studying something that was excavated somewhere, and whether big book can be written on that, whether it is 7,000 years old or 7,500 years old. Now, it is good. There is nothing to criticize it. But, somebody just say that I am not interested in that. Mike would say that what does it matter, you see? that whether it is 7,500 years or 7,000 years makes no difference to me. But this science of religion, how to lead our life, is related to everyone, because everyone is living. Everybody wants the life to be purposefully lived. And so, here we see that what is known as the theoretical aspect of that knowledge as well as practical aspect of it, both have been very beautifully told from the perspective of a common person like Arjuna. The disciple here is like us, who has so many desires in life. Life gets buffeted, you know, kicked around like a soccer ball, because we have so many conflicting desires. Sometimes I feel I must do this. Next moment, I feel I must do something that. So, there is always a pressure on us. The life gets pulled in various different directions. And therefore, Arjuna has the same problem, that what direction should I take? The conflicts like this makes us confused. Confusion occurs because of these conflicts, and these confusion then further creates more conflicts. Conflict and confusion is thus a vicious cycle in one's life, that you get confused as to what to do now. You are going on the street, and then suddenly you see a fork, and you wanted to, at a fork now you cannot stop there. There is no place to stop the car. There are other cars driving behind you, and they start making if you go on a, and you see a fork now, whether to take left or whether to take right. If we do not know it clearly, one gets confused. Which side should I take? So in life, we come to such situations very often. So Arjuna came to that situation, and the Lord has been guiding. Lord Krishna has been guiding him through this. This is therefore called this whole science, that it is the Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra. Means it is the theoretical understanding of the truth, the relation between I and world, whether there is anything one or many, all these conflicting, confusing ideas theoretically understood and also practically implemented, that is called Yoga Shastra. Yoga is this practical aspect, converting this theory into our practical enrichment, practical experience. So third chapter was finished on last Friday, and today we plan to begin the fourth chapter. Third chapter was titled Karma Yoga. As we have been seeing, this science it tells us how to convert our day-to-day activities into means of spiritual unfoldment. Those activities make us confused more, we get bogged down by them, and the activities seem to bind us down. But these activities can be converted into our means of spiritual unfoldment. And that science is called Karma Yoga. While doing this, telling Arjuna about this, Arjuna brought out an important question about what makes us go against this. we all know, even we are convinced that this is right for me to do. Yet we feel a force in life in spite of knowing that this is right for me. I feel a pull to go in the opposite direction. We feel an unstoppable pull sometimes, even after knowing that something is right for me to do. I feel a pull to go in the opposite direction. And thus, and that pull, when cannot be stopped, I do something that I really did not want to do. I wanted to be ethical, I wanted to be perfectly moral, but something pulled me forcibly in the opposite direction. And we need to know what is that force and how to handle it. So Arjuna's question was regarding that, and Krishna answered that, that look, this is your desires. Our desires, and those desires also has the other face called anger. And we cannot become angry if there are no such desires in our mind. That anger and desires, they are always connected, friends. So anger and desire, he says that this is your enemy. He doesn't say these are your enemies. That very thing that comes to you in the form of desire also comes in the form of anger. And that makes you commit all the heinous, sinful, criminal actions in life. And you see all the police records, everything, your own, our own behavior, what makes us act in the way that is against ourselves, against our family, against society in general. What is this, how one gets into criminal behavior? All this is, it is very good, you know, we speak about it, that there should be, something must be done to stop the crimes in the society. But what should be done and how to go about it? And the idea is very nice that we should not have crime in society. But how to stop it? The science has been told that we have to stand up on the foundation of our divine nature. Our divine nature is to be held on to get over these tendencies. In our divine nature, there is fulfillment. There is no desires. Desires are because we feel I don't have this and I don't have that. I must have some modern kind of TV. I must have that desire I get. Because I don't have it. And I feel the idea that will bring happiness in my life. So I get the desire for it. And now that desire to be fulfilled means I need money for it. If I don't have it, then, well, if the desire is very strong, then I will rob somebody for that. It is because I have that strong desire to have it. Then, whatever can be done for to satisfy that desire. I am giving just this example. Desires are not always that simple also. So, it is, that is what makes us commit these sins. But when this knowledge comes to us that I am perfect, all happiness is really in me. I do not need to possess something or to possess somebody. Those things or persons do not bring happiness to me. See, one can never be happy in one's life if our happiness is mortgaged with some persons or with some things. And we feel that, well, my life will be happy, and then I put that happiness into some person. If I get this girl or this boy in my life, then I will be happy. Not that they become happy thereby, but even in that feeling, what is there, that my happiness is now mortgaged to that particular person. And that particular person, I don't have any control over that particular thing or that person. Moreover, those things also change. When I thought, sometimes one feels, if that I get that person in my life, then I will be so happy. The life will be full of bliss. Now what happens? That the person may come, but after a little while you see that that is not going to bring happiness. So you feel that that choice wasn't right. I must now look for another person. It is so the behavior becomes like that if we do not know that the source of happiness is in me. If we have the source of happiness within us, then we will not have such desires and such dependence. And thus the getting of happiness will be much more easier in life. In fact, you don't have to go for it. You know that it is already with you. So this is possible only and with by taking the stand on one's divine nature. And the idea that each soul is potentially divine has to be borne in mind. Now, the third chapter is finished. The third chapter began, as you may recall, with the question of Arjuna, that why you are telling me to do the works when you feel or when you glorify the knowledge. Let me just be having this knowledge. Why should I be working? And that work also is such a horrible work of fighting the war. Why should I get into that? Now the answer was being given. In between, this question of Arjuna had come. That has been answered. Fourth chapter begins with the continuation of the answer to the original question, the science of Karma Yoga. The yoga of action is further being now told in the fourth chapter. It is elucidated more, and it is now in the beginning of the fourth chapter, the one fear that we get when we hear something new being told, that is being addressed. If I am told by somebody that if you do this like this, if you lead life like this, then you will become blissful. And it is a big struggle to lead life like that. I feel that I am probably committing my whole life to it. And what will happen if I don't, if the path was not right? Then I may be ruining my life. It is a big investment. So I must first get information about, you know, are there others who have done like that? And what is their experience about it? When you want, say, for example, a contractor to build a big house for you, then when you ask for bids from different contractors, and also ask for the references, whom with you worked before, tell me that you had completed this building and that structure and worked for this person and that person, so that I can ask them whether the work was satisfactory or not. You have to find out before you jump in. People are afraid, you know, that, well, this path the Lord has told, but who knows, you know, it may, has this been followed by anybody before, or this is something new, completely uncharted territory that I am going into. So, Lord understands our psychology, that we would be more concerned that if I am the first to follow it, you know, like that story of the surgeon, that he was going to operate on some patient, and the patient said, "Oh doctor, I am terribly scared. This is my first operation, you know." The doctor said, "Hey, don't worry, this is my first operation too." So, it is, if it is the first thing, you feel scared, and if somebody is doing that operation on you for the first time, and then that's, of course, that fear then becomes hundredfold. So Arjuna inside is probably scared that this is, am I the first one to walk on this path that Lord Krishna is telling? And also, hey, Lord Krishna has not told it to anybody. That is the first operation for me and first operation for him too, or what? So, this fear is removed in the first few verses. And while doing that, a wonderful science, that the idea of God appearing in human form, that is being elucidated in a very beautiful way. This chapter, fourth chapter, has this very important new feature. In the Upanishads or the Vedanta, you do not find much mention of the incarnation of God. God assuming human form. The idea that appears in various different religions, a human messenger or a human human form coming as God, the Son of God, all different things, or a perfect one, whatever name one gives it to that, but it is a way in which you feel the divinity coming at your level, where you can feel that divinity, where you can hold on to it and go ahead. There have to be, you know, some human imperfections there. The human form has to be what? It has to be like human. So, has to have sometimes healthy, sometimes sick, and that, like all human beings, if the fellow never had any sickness in life, never sneezed once in 100 years, then you have a doubt, you know, this is not like me. If that being looks like human but has 4 hands, then you say, this is not like me. There have to be a lot of semblance with human appearance. Like human beings, this person also has to have the expression of many desires, many other physical and mental difficulties through which one has to go. And yet, the essential divine nature must be so manifest that it has to be, it can be palpably seen there. That becomes then the tool, the like a ladder for us to reach the divinity. Therefore, they say that God becomes man so that man may become God. That is the principle of God incarnation. So, as we will see it as we progress in the fourth chapter, it begins the first verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Ahamavyayam Vivasman Manave Praha Manurikshvakave Bravit. So, this is the eternal yoga I taught to Vivaswat. Vivaswat taught it to Manu, and Manu taught it to Ikshvaku. So Lord says that this, you are not my first student, you see. I had taught it earlier to whom? To Vivaswan. And then Vivaswan, my disciple Vivaswan, learning it from me, taught to Manu. And then Manu taught it to Ikshvaku. So, he is showing that the knowledge goes from teacher to student. Then that student becomes teacher. The teachers, they don't fall from the skies. You go to school, the teachers also go to the school. They learn, and then in turn they become teachers themselves. So, like that, Lord said that I taught this knowledge. To whom? To Vivaswan. Vivaswan is the sun god and also is considered the firstborn. It is like sun god means, as you see in the Bible, that Lord said, let there be light, and there was light. So that light first made everything appear there. Let there be light. So this in the light means the light of awareness. Then you become aware of various things. So the light is the first thing, and that is therefore considered here the name of the creator aspect of the divine. In Hindu mythology, that is called Brahma, the creator, the Lord. Got him first, and then through him the creation came out. So he was the creator. So the firstborn was he. So when he was born, Lord gave him the knowledge too. Lord said, I gave him the knowledge then. So it shows that the knowledge also is eternal. Because it came with the firstborn, and the firstborn person was given the knowledge by the God. And it is clearly mentioned, the word also is used here, avyayam, this yoga that I am teaching you. It is not something original that I am telling you just out of I got the idea just now and I am telling you. It is an eternal science. This I had given it earlier in the beginning to the firstborn. And then Vivaswan Manave Praha. This Vivaswan told it to the Manu, who actually was the creator of human beings then. All human beings therefore are called in Sanskrit Manava. Manava means the progeny of this Manu. So from Manu all of them came. So the human beings in Sanskrit are called Manava. So he then, this Vivaswan, the sun god, gave it to Manu. And from Manu it came to the Ikshvaku, who was a mighty ruler. In the clan, you know, of Rama. Rama was born in the clan of Ikshvaku. So, it was given to him. So, like that, this tradition of knowledge was introduced by God. Lord said that I am the one who has introduced this, like in this way. So, the knowledge is eternal. Moreover, this knowledge is coming from the divine source. What does it indicate is that it is free from errors. The knowledge coming from just a human source is naturally fraught with the imperfections and frailties of human understanding. The knowledge that comes from the divine source is devoid of all these imperfections. It is very clear, it is free from defects. So this is the knowledge that has come from the God. God has given it right in the beginning of this creation to the firstborn. And then that firstborn gave it to the firstborn amongst the human beings. And from that it spread like that to others. So that is how the knowledge progresses. But what happens in the course of time, corruption gets into it. Human beings, you know, we are expert in corrupting all the great teachings because of our desires. In the course of time, we just turn all the teachings on their head, make them upside down. And then probably the God would be thinking, well, what I taught and what these people are following in my name, there seems to be completely, just they have distorted it completely. The time, as the time flows, human beings, because of their desires, they then start thinking that, well, God has told like that. But if I just twitch a little bit, then I still will be able to follow the God's teaching and also will have my other desire also fulfilled. So I slowly turn and feel that the God is not watching what I am doing. You know. We feel that the God is not watching. And so, because must be busy in doing so many things, you know, what has he got time to think about what this insignificant fellow is doing? We feel that God cannot watch on everything. So we make a little change in what God has taught. Then somebody else sees that and twists it a little more. And then a little more, and then after a few centuries or so, we see all the teachings completely destroyed. In the name of religion, therefore, so many, and we see heinous criminal actions committed. It is not the blame doesn't go to those who promulgated this religion. But we are experts in twisting those teachings. And thus, in the name of religion, we do everything that is against it. We keep the name of the religion. As they say that the last Christian was crucified, you know. The only one Christian was the who was crucified. The exaggeration apart, but the idea is that the distortion begins because I feel that I must look for what is comfortable to me. Comfortable religion, you know, that is what we want. Everything should be comfy. So it is the religion also should be just what gives me comfort. Those things I do. So Lord tells that in the next verse. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo viduhu sakale neha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. This yoga, thus traditionally handed down, the royal sages knew. Through the great lapse of time, this yoga is lost in this world, O scorcher of foes. Arjuna is called here that he was a very valorous person. So, Sri Krishna calls him there, the tormentor or the scorcher of those who cross your path. So, it is, what happened to this yoga? This yoga continued, but the distortion went on and on. and ultimately you couldn't really distinguish from the right and wrong. It became it all got destroyed by the time a few centuries pass. Everything just becomes spoiled. It is like the person started pouring a little water in the milk. It was said that everybody should bring a small pot of milk, just one cup of milk everybody should pour, because it was thought that if the village deity, if that village deity could be immersed in milk, then the drought in that land will go away. So everybody decided that we will all bring one cup of milk, and it was seen that if every family brings a cup, there will be more than sufficient milk to put that deity in the milk. But then one person thought that, no, everybody will be bringing milk. Who cares if I bring water? All others are going to bring milk. So Yogatmananda thought that, let me just take water. I don't want to waste milk. So instead of milk, I took water. And not only I did that, Vishwanath also thought the same way, and Triveni was not far behind either. So after time it was seen that all is only water there. So there wasn't any milk. Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that he was heard in the state of half ecstatic talking to God, that, you see, what? How can I teach these people? If there is a little water in the milk, one can evaporate it. But there is hardly any milk, and all water, and I have been blowing the fire for such a long time, my lungs are spoiled. But there is no way this is going to look like milk anymore. So that is how the situation happens. The religion in the better form of it, it gets reduced to different just socialities, meeting places. The churches become just meeting places. Once a week we go meet friends there, have a little chat, and the sermon and all, we hear a little bit, and then come back. It is once a week, that is okay. You know, it is good to spend some time meeting friends and families who come to the church or the synagogue or to temple or whatever. A little bit is okay, you know, then, and we keep in touch with each other thereby, and keep the contact with the church authorities also, because for marriage or for some other things, I may also require that to fulfill the social need. So that becomes just an idea in our worldly life, rather than using that religion as a tool to divinize us. We just are satisfied by this kind of, this is what is called religion. And so when it comes to this level, the Lord feels that now he should again tell the original truth. What the religion was in its purest form has to be revealed again. And so, Lord again assumes the human form. In the third verse, it is said that, sa evayam maya tedya yoga prokta puratanah bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam yetaduttamam. Now, a very beautiful scene you can imagine there. Lord Krishna friend of Arjuna there, as human, it is, in fact, from the hierarchy point of view there, Arjuna is superior to Krishna. Remember here, Arjuna is the warrior and Krishna is the charioteer. Considered a lowly job, like a chauffeur, a boss sits behind in the car and the chauffeur drives. So it's like that, Krishna is just chauffeur, charioteer of Arjuna. Arjuna is the boss, warrior. So that we saw also in the beginning, Arjuna told Krishna, hey, take my chariot between the two armies so that I can watch whom to fight and all that. And Sri Krishna just followed the directions, the guidelines, and just took the chariot there. So now this is his friend, he is a charioteer. They are of the same age. In Mahabharata you will see almost the same age, Krishna and Arjuna, not much of an age difference. So, and now Arjuna is patiently hearing that. He says that very ancient yoga has been taught by me to you this day, since you are my devotee and friend. For this is the supreme secret. Rahasyam hi etad uttamam. This is the supreme secret that is being revealed by Lord Krishna to his devotee and friend. Arjuna is seeing Krishna right in front of him as his friend, as his charioteer, as someone who is in age almost same as him. And yet what Lord Krishna is telling, I had taught that yoga to the firstborn and so forth in the ancient times. How ancient? Before the creation, before even the time was created, I had been there and taught this yoga to the firstborn. That ancient yoga, I am telling you again, because it was all destroyed in the course of time. Time is the great destroyer, the great leveler. It is. In time, everything is just smoothened out, leveled. It is. Time kills everything. Everything gets swallowed in the stomach of time. Just as you may eat a pizza, you may eat some crunchy nuts, you may drink a Coke, and in the stomach it is all mixed, then you don't know what is Coke and what is pizza, and all is reduced to one. So time is that kind of leveler. The rich go there, when their time comes, they go to the same place where a poor goes. A highly learned goes to the same place where an illiterate goes. So, time is that kind of a big leveler. All our achievements, they just have to be left there. We don't carry them with us. All our wealth and our property and our all relations and all that, all is just left here. It is said that who goes with you? Artha grihe tishthanti, all your property and wealth, it remains just here. And your friends and all others, relations and friends, how far do they come? They come to the funeral place or the cremation place. One of our devotees recently passed away, so we had gone to the cremation. So we said prayers and all that, and then, he said, cremation, do you want to get into the cremation? No, we came back, nobody, up to that only, you go, just to, One lady told that there was her husband had passed away. She went for the to the funeral home and asked that clerk there asked, "Do you want burial or cremation?" She said, "Do both. I don't want to take any chances." The relations and friends go up to only that, not after that. So what goes with you? It is said only the wisdom that you have acquired, the karma that you have acquired, that goes with you. Nothing else goes with you. So this is the time. It is in this time things got corrupted. And so Lord said, so I am telling you again, and not only to him, through all of us, all of us who want to relate to God as a devotee or as a friend, whatever, we have to form a connection with God. Like in the college, they are giving in the Brown University or our Dorothy Johnson and Wales University and all these big schools, they give a lot of education there. But you have to get connected to it, is it not? You have to get admission there, then that knowledge comes to you, is it not, Triveni? Otherwise it won't come to you, you have to get admission there. So, this knowledge being given by God is for everybody, but we have to seek admission there, we have to get the admission. And what is the requirement for admission? Not big fees, you know, not that you have to pay $30,000 a year or something like that, and not too much, no expenses. You have to become the friend and devotee of God. Not a bad idea. After all, we may become friends with so many. Why not become friend with God? Become friend with God. Rana, is it a big price? No, just become friend with God and then you get enrolled in that university of God and you get this wisdom. Arjuna has been told, I am giving you this great secret of life. This is very secret. Secret means you may say now the books of Bhagavad Gita are available. Why it is secret? The books may be available. But the knowledge will not be available. You will not be able to open those words unless you have that relation with God. You will not be able to open it at all. That is the password, you know. That when you have that, then only you will be able to open it. In that sense, it is a great secret. So many will read the books. Very few will get the message. It comes only through this devotion and through this connection. If you are connected to that, then it comes to you. Now Arjuna is hearing all that, and before Krishna proceeds, he makes him stop. Wait a minute. I see that this is all baloney that you are telling. What is this? It is... you are just born like me, if just maybe a few days older than I am, and that Vivaswan was many, how many who do not ends back. How is it that you taught him? He didn't use those words, but actually the expression you can imagine. He probably is saying, Krishna, stop this nonsense. Do you think I am so dumb not to understand even that it is you and I are contemporary? How could you have taught that fellow? And this is a natural question that we would get, you know. We are all really eternal. Just as we are not constricted by our clothing, so we are also not really constricted by our body. It is foolish to think that I am this body, just as it is foolish to think that I am this shirt. I am not this shirt, this shirt gets changed. So, also I am not the body. I am not a particular man or a particular woman or these are like clothings that we take on and throw away. So this idea that will be explained, that how the Lord gives the answer to this question, we shall try to study it in the next Friday class. Any questions? We will conclude with the closing prayers.
गीतास्तु गीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्रविस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।